In this episode of The Queso, I welcome Raymond Rodriguez. He's the newly named Abbott Academy Director of the Joffrey Academy of Dance at the official school of the Joffrey Ballet. Thanks to a major gift by the Abbott Fund of $3 million, Joffrey Academy of Dance is able to do so much for students in and around the Chicago area. Join me as I talk to Raymond about these possibilities and also as we learn more about his background in dance and how he started and just the exciting things that he has planned for the years to come. To learn more about the programs, including the new Winning Work series for this year, visit joffrey.org. That's joffrey.org. Thanks for joining me. Welcome to The Queso. Thank you for taking time today. Why don't we start a little bit about your background? Tell me about yourself so we can share that with our listeners.
Sure. As you know, my name is Raymond Rodriguez. I was born and raised in New York City, in Manhattan. I am Puerto Rican. I grew up in a household of dance, not professional, but salsas and merengues. And as a family, we were always gathering together every weekend. My grandparents lived on the third floor. We lived on the fourth floor. Aunt and uncle lived across the street. So we were a close-knit family, but always dancing. I got into classical ballet when I entered high school. I started first as a tap dancer. Neighborhood friend, my mom's friend, bought me a pair of tap shoes for my birthday. My parents didn't really want me to dance. But since I had the tap shoes, they enrolled me in the local school, taught by a Radio City Music Hall Rockette.
Wow.
My sisters went to this school and they studied dance. And so I did it as a hobby once a week. And I went to a Catholic grammar school. And my eighth grade teacher, Sister Joanne, said, "You should audition for the High School of Performing Arts," which was, I don't know if you know the movie Fame, was my high school.
Oh, wow. And the series, of course.
Yes. So I, never studying, you know, formal dance, except for tap dance, I went to the audition and they asked us, you know, change into your tights. And I looked at her like she was crazy. I was like, men don't wear tights. I was never exposed to it. I never saw it. So I took the audition in my street clothes, rolled up my pants and just imitated a ballet, you know, the ballet class and a modern dance class. And I had my prepared solo, which was a tap dance. And lo and behold, I was accepted into the high school. It was a totally different world for me from going to a Catholic grammar school where I wore my navy blue slacks and my button-down shirt and my navy blue tie to going to this high school where we had students from all five boroughs merging together in our school, studying either dance, music, or drama. So, and it was a wide mix of individuals coming, like I said, from different backgrounds, ethnic backgrounds, economic backgrounds, but we all melded together because we had that one focus, our art. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
You probably experienced like a lot of free spirits versus what you were accustomed to at school.
Most definitely. And this was in the 70s when I went to high school. Wow. And back in that area, it was on 46th Street between 6th and 7th Avenue in Manhattan. It wasn't the best of neighborhoods back in that time. But, you know, my parents said, okay, give it a try. And I took the subway on my own to go down to 46th Street. We lived in Inwood Heights in uptown Manhattan. So I would take the A train down to 46th Street, and it was a totally different world.
Was it like 20-minute ride, so more or less?
Yeah, yeah. About a 20-minute ride, yeah, from 207th Street down.
And to back up just a little bit, why did your parents not really encourage you to do dance in the first place, professionally anyway?
Well, I think it was that Latino machismo that the girls can dance, but the boys are going to do sports. And which I did. I played baseball and basketball and hockey. I think the mindset. But once I get into it, my parents were so proud, and you know, we would go to family gatherings, and my dad was always, "Raymond, why don't you do a tap dance for everyone?" I was like, "Dad, you're embarrassing me." But he was so proud, as was my mother. And they saw that I started excelling in it, but I never thought, you know, I would make a career in it, because I didn't even know how to.
Right. Where does this go? Like, what can you do with this? Especially in the 70s, like, how much exposure was there? There was no social media. So it was like, you see the posters.
Right.
There's a ballet going on, but what else?
The most exposure I had was, you know, every Sunday we had dinner with my grandparents. They said they lived on the third floor. And my grandfather always watched the Lawrence Welk show. And they had entertainment, and there was a tap dancer, and he would always come, Ramoncito, ven aquí, come over here, you know, you got to watch. So I've watched. And, but again, you know, I never thought, how could I ever do this? Mm-hmm. I saw movies of, you know, Fred Astaire and Gene Kelly. So they were idols of mine as tap dancers, but I never even dreamed that I could have a professional career until I went to the high school.
You know, it's interesting that Sister Joanne, I believe you said her name was the one that encouraged you to go to the school.
Right. And she was our gym teacher, as well as she taught academics. But, you know, she knew of the school, and she said, Raymond, you know, I told my parents, you should audition for the school. And I had already been accepted into Cardinal Hayes Men's Catholic High School. And I was going to go to an all-boys school, Catholic school, and continued down that path.
You dodged that bullet, huh?
Yeah. And I have to say, I really didn't like performing arts high school in the beginning. I didn't like ballet, let's just say.
Okay.
It was too rigid. I didn't understand it. But during my holiday break, Christmas break, our teacher said, you have to continue studying. Mm-hmm. So they gave me a list of schools, of ballet schools in Manhattan that I should go to so I can continue studying. Mm-hmm. So with my mom, we went to the Joffrey Ballet School. We went to American Ballet Theatre School. We went to New York City Ballet School, which was the School of American Ballet. And we went, and I auditioned, and they all gave me a scholarship, which was, you know, amazing after only studying ballet for a couple of months from September through December. My mom's like, I like American Ballet Theater the best. Let's go there. So I went there after for that holiday break, and then I continued there. They gave me a scholarship. And after high school, I would take my ballet classes at high school, plus my academic studies. And then I would race over to American Ballet Theater for a 3:30 class. And then I was dancing until 6:30 at night. And then we then had moved to Bayside Queens. So I wasn't getting home till 8:30 at night, doing my homework on the subway, on the buses. And then something clicked where, you know, I started to really enjoy ballet and excelled. And I thought, okay, this is what I want to do. I was exposed to, at that time in the 70s, Mikhail Baryshnikov, Rudolf Nureyev, all these incredible dancers that I was riding the elevator with, you know, when I would go to American Ballet Theater. And, you know, and then my first ballet that I ever saw, I was participating in, because as one of the students at American Ballet Theater, they said, well, we have this children's role in this ballet. Would you want to be in it? I was like, sure, not knowing. And there I was, and on the stage of the Metropolitan Opera House at Lincoln Center for my first ballet that I was on stage. So it was, you know, I still didn't even know what it was. And I think back now, it's like, wow, how fortunate I was, and, you know, lucky to be able to be given a scholarship to continue learning in my craft and in this dance education, and the exposure that I had was unbelievable.
You know, it's interesting you say that about ballet and how you were kind of resisting it in the beginning, but it's like any art, you learn the classics, the basics, and that becomes a foundation for everything you do from then on.
Right. Yeah. In high school, after our first year, going into our sophomore year, we had to pick a major, whether it was ballet or modern dance. Mm-hmm. So I chose ballet as my major, but we still had to take learn dance three times a week. We would take jazz class, dance history, drama class. So it like opened up different avenues for me within dance to learn different facets of the dance world and different genres.
Since you studied there, how has it changed? How has dance changed, if at all? Like how it's interpreted or where it's being, you know, seen and who sees it?
Right. I think I was pretty fortunate in the late 70s. Ballet sort of had this, it was called the ballet boom with the Russian defectors, Baryshnikov, Natalia Makarova. So there was this explosion of ballet, let's say in the ballet world, but then it also went mainstream where Baryshnikov was in movies and Hollywood movies, and he became a household name. He was in Sex and the City. And so, you know, it brought dance up to ballet to a wider audience. As you mentioned earlier with social media, you know, we didn't have our cell phones where we can take an instant picture and post it online. And right, so right now, I mean, the followers on Facebook and Instagram for ballet stars or dancers is quite amazing. And what you can learn by watching videos of dancers, which we never had before. I would have to go to the library to watch dance films or see it live on in a performance.
And so, like you said, growing up in a Latino home, sometimes there's kids who will never go to see a ballet, even if they live in a 20-minute ride from there. Would you find that to be the case for those peers of yours growing up, that perhaps they just never were exposed to it?
Like I said, you know, we lived in our neighborhood. We were in Inwood Heights, right above Washington Heights. And, you know, we had our Catholic grammar school and we had the YMCA and youth Catholic organization where we had our activities. And we sort of stayed within our bubble in our neighborhood. And that's what we knew. But I do have to say my parents did bring me to some plays and some shows. And I remember seeing my first Broadway show was A Coraline when it premiered. And that just like blew away. And I remember seeing a summer performance of Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet, a play that my parents brought me to. And so they started like exposing me and my sisters to some of the arts. But again, we never knew how to pursue a career in the arts if we wanted to. And I think that was true for many in my neighborhood.
Yeah. And I'm glad that it's evolved so much. And before we talk about what you're doing here now, I just find it really interesting that you were going to school there around the time they were making the Fame movie, around the same time, I think. How much alike was it, or was it really exaggerated, like in the movie and in the series?
So when the movie premiered, it was my graduating class.
Wow.
I had auditioned for the movie and I was accepted into the movie to be one of the dancers in the movie. I decided not to pursue that. And instead I had a scholarship to study ballet up in Rochester, New York for the summer. And that's when the filming took place.
I see.
In the summer of 79. Knowing what this movie was going to be, you know, we didn't know what Fame was. And it wasn't even called Fame in the beginning. It was called Hot Lunch.
Okay, I did not know that.
And the reason why they changed the name of the movie was right around the corner from our school, there was a movie theater that was playing pornographic films. And that movie was called Hot Lunch. And it was on the marquee. I mean, yeah, so it's called Hot Lunch. The producer's like, we need to change the name of this movie. And so it became Fame. So like I said, I didn't participate in the movie. I went and studied dance, ballet up in Rochester, New York for the summer. So all of my friends are in the movie. Many of my teachers are in the movie. And we went to the premiere in the spring of 1980, and then it premiered following after that. But I do have to say that it's a bit exaggerated, but we did dance during lunchtime. One of the students would be the DJ for that lunch hour, or people would play instruments. So that did happen during lunchtime. We didn't dance on cars in the street. But we would go outside and people would play their violin or trumpet, and we would dance, and because we were just so into the arts.
What amazing memories you must have of that place.
Yeah, and to this day, thanks to Facebook, you know, we've reconnected many of my friends, and one was one of the leading roles in the movie Fame. You know, we had a reunion this past summer over Zoom.
Nice.
So we all met and we, you know, still stay connected. yeah, so it's wonderful. Great memories.
I was going to say, maybe it was initially called Hot Lunch because of the lunch scene where they're always doing what you say.
And there right.
was, you know, music being played, people dancing and things.
Yeah, and one of the songs was called Hot Lunch in the movie.
Okay. <Right. laughs> That is so cool. Well, I'm so honored to meet you and to have a firsthand account of what happened there at that time.
Yeah, thank you.
So tell me about your role now here in Chicago at the Joffrey Ballet.
Sure. I came Academy to Chicago Dance, to work for the Joffrey Ballet in 2016. And I came to Chicago as the head of the student within our academy is our highest level of students that are on the cusp of becoming professional dancers. Mm-hmm. Some of them do dance with a main company in large productions. So I came to run that department within the academy. And it was, you know, really wonderful, just not just teaching dance, but mentoring these students. And they were predominantly young college age, just out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
17 to 21 years of age, many of them moving from all over the world to come to the program. I would go on an audition tour and look for the talent and bring them to Chicago, offering scholarships. Some were paying tuition. And it was mentoring these students that moving away from home for the first time or from a country that did not speak the language. And so it was wearing many different hats of not just teaching dance, but teaching life skills and how to be an adult and the etiquette of dance and how to become a professional and what's expected. And so all the drama with all of that was happening around me and us at the academy, but it was wonderful.
Do you take them like networking when they were doing that? Like, would you take them out and network in the ballet community?
I would think
you know, other professionals.
Yeah, so many of them, I would say about 2/3 of them went on to professional careers in ballet. Some went on to university to continue their dance education or leave dance. They finally realize it's too tough or, you know, this is not for me. When they really have this serious training program, they're working 6 days a week from 9 to 5 in the afternoon. It's rigorous. But you know, we would through my contacts, my colleagues' contacts around the world with dance institutions, dance companies, artistic directors, we would put them in touch with our students, auditioning to their companies, as we cannot, you know, accept our full graduating class into the Joffrey Ballet. The Joffrey Ballet consists of about 44 professional dancers, maybe two, maybe one, maybe three spots open up a year.
Wow, that's
because dancers
great.
Continue on in the company. So, you know, we've had a great success rate with our dancers even going into the main company. Mm-hmm. So we have about 12 dancers right now that have gone through the academy that are now dancing professionally in Joffrey Ballet, the company. So about 12 out of, you know, it's maybe 25%.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm really proud that the academy is only 11 years old.
So yeah. New role, the Abbott Foundation, and how that is changing things for you.
Right. So in 2020, I became, September 2019.
Okay.
I became the academy director of the whole academy. Our previous director was leaving. I applied for the position. There was a national search, and happily I was offered the position to be the director of the academy. Since then, the organization reached out to Abbott, who is a major sponsor of the Joffrey Ballet, Abbott Fund, and they endowed a gift to the Joffrey Ballet into our endowment to name the position of the Academy Director. So this gift, and now the title change, it became the Abbott Academy Director of the Joffrey Academy of Dance. So yeah, that's my new title as of a few months ago. And it's, you know, that Abbott really believes in dance education, what we can do to get out into the community to educate our young people, to expose them to classical ballet and dance.
How does that look like in one example of how that looks like in the community with this new endeavor with Abbott?
And with that, also, we put a five-year plan, strategic plan together, thanks to the McKinsey & Company, with Linda Swayze, the community engagement director, and myself and our committees. We worked on the strategic plan to put in place. Bottom line, it became Joffrey for all. Okay. We really believe that dance is for all. So we have our different, we have our community engagement, we have our academy, and we have our company, which is the professional dancers. Mm-hmm. We believe, as I said, in Joffrey for all. And through our community engagement, we are looking to expose, to educate, and excel. I mean, expose, to get exposure out. Mm-hmm. We go out into the communities. Community engagement has, with Chicago Public Schools, many, many programs in the schools teaching dance. Mm-hmm. We select a group from those different schools to come to the Joffrey Tower. Okay. And take classes at our studios for a three-week period in the summer. Mm. This is age from kindergarten through second grade students. Okay. So they're very young. And then from there, after that three-week program, we select a few to come into our academy through what we call the Bridge Program.
Okay.
So the Bridge Program, then they come into the academy and they start in our children's division, and they have a full scholarship from once they enter the Bridge Program at a young age all the way through high school till graduating of high school.
Nice.
With a full scholarship for tuition, attire, once the ladies go on to point in their point shoes are purchased for them as well.
Wow, and how do they qualify for these programs?
So through our community engagement, they go out and teach dance in the schools, okay. public schools. They select, as I said, a few dancers from those programs, right? And they see who has the potential, the talent, based on musicality, on how quickly they learn, so physicality.
Yeah.
And so then they're selected, and then from our academy, we have our faculty, and they go and watch these students, and they say, this one, that one.
Yeah.
Let's move them into the academy, into our Bridge Program.
That's great. You know, that's great for those that do go on and study with you. But at the same time, even those students that don't get that opportunity, just getting that exposure at the school, I think is just great. It's just something different and maybe something that boosts self-esteem, which right now with the pandemic and so much isolation, I'm sure there's going to be a welcome return to that eventually.
Right. Right. And you know, I just had a conversation last week with the leaders of the Cultural Arts Center of Chicago to go into the parks in their cultural centers. So we're planning for once we can open up and be in theaters again, to go into different neighborhoods and put on a performance with some of our community engagement students and our academy students combined. To go into these theaters and perform. So we're looking at the spring of 22 to do that safely.
It'll be here before you know it.
That's what we're constantly planning. You know, we're, we've been in a hybrid mode. You know, we were shut down from March until September of 2021 or 2020. And then we opened up for our higher level students to come into Joffrey Tower since September. and our children's and youth programs have been online. You know, we had to switch when we closed down in March of 2020 to pivot and put everything online, over 100 classes per week.
So online, they're watching their instructors doing
from their home. Right.
It takes a lot of dedication on both sides, educators and students.
It was a big learning curve for all of us, how to teach online, just even how to use the platform, what platform is best to use, the inequities of, you know, does every family have a device that they can use, internet service. And you know, so there were many obstacles, but, you know, we persevered and we continued with our dance education for all those students, which, you know, I'm super proud of the full faculty and admin staff for, you know, us regrouping so that we can go within 1 week after being shut down in March 13th, exactly, to 1 week later, open up all of our classes.
That's and really quick.
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, we didn't want to stop the education. And we thought it was important for these students to continue on to have something. And so, this summer, we hope we are planning on bringing in our younger divisions now through our summer programs into the fall in studio, safely, of course.
Yes. Yeah, so this summer, it's fast approaching. So there's lots to do on your end as well, I can imagine, to get that ready.
Right. We've had auditions already, usually in the month of January into mid-February. We, with our school directors through Dance USA, we gathered together in a small group, 14 different schools around the country. We band together to have a national summer intensive virtual audition. So each city would host. The other adjudicators from other schools would zoom in and watch the students at the host city. Wow. So we were able to see over 700 students in those auditions.
Well, that's kind of a bonus.
Yeah. You know, we were like, how can we make this work? We normally travel to different cities around the country to audition students. But of course, students couldn't travel. We couldn't travel. So each city hosted and reviewed and adjudicated and offered acceptances into our programs and scholarships.
Do you think even after you go all the way in-person instruction, there will still be some online classes available, or is that something just for now?
I think we will continue in some form to offer some online classes. We you know, started online classes for adults. With beginner ballet, intermediate ballet, a ballet fit program, besides our children's and youth and pre-professional divisions.
And here I thought I was too late. I can still try.
It's it's never too late. Yeah, we have our beginning ballet class for adults and taught by a former professional dancer from Joffrey Ballet. All of our teachers right now in the adult programming are former artists of the Joffrey Ballet. Teaching. So that was important also of our Joffrey for All and the life cycle of a dancer. Yeah. You know, what happens once you reach a certain age and you can't perform anymore, and you know, you'll always be able to dance no matter how old you are. True. But as a professional, you know, so how do we train and educate our professional dancers to become teachers or choreographers, administrators of in the arts? And so you know, we're working on all of that in our strategic plan as well. So we have, you know, it's a great faculty with many of them former dancers of the Joffrey Ballet or from other companies around the world.
You know, that's so great. And you are right in calling it Joffrey for All, because you are touching like all the different milestones in a person's life, from second grade to retirement age. You know, you can partake and most importantly, keep the word Joffrey in our mouths and keep it going and communicating it with others.
That's right. And another program that I'm really proud of is our Winning Works program. It's a choreographer's competition for people of color, artists of color. Alana artist. So they submit their applications and videos. We select four winners every year. Last year, we were celebrating our 10th anniversary. We were never able to perform the works for the choreographers. So I actually brought them back this year to reimagine their works with social distancing. no partnering. They couldn't touch another dancer. And we're filming the works right now to be released at the end of March and into April.
Take a listen as Chanel Da Silva talks about the excitement she feels at presenting her choreographed work, Borders, on March 25th.
So when Raymond Rodriguez called me and said, Chanel, we want to bring you back to Chicago. We want to restage Borders, but we have a couple of restrictions. So now thinking about it, I have to find a way to still get the same idea of borders and boundaries and distance and closeness being obstructed without physically touching. And I was like, okay, that's a challenge. Whether or not the dancers can touch or not doesn't define the essence and the plot and the idea behind this piece. Actually, it still resonates today. In 2021, we are living with borders because of the pandemic that we're living through, you know. I'm actually really intrigued to be able to come back to it, step into it with a whole new perspective, remembering what I originally created it from, and now to see it be able to evolve and still live in this new reality is really quite cool.
But yeah, it's a wonderful competition to bring these emerging choreographers of color. Yeah. And we bring them to Chicago. They work with our dancers in our highest level to choreograph a brand new work. Oh, it's produced, great. New costumes. We have performed typically at the Museum of Contemporary Art, their theater. Mm-hmm. But this year, you know, we had to still find a way to celebrate the works of these choreographers and to have these students work with choreographers. So that's, I'm really proud of the filming that we're doing in our Black Box theater at Joffrey Tower,
and
soon to be released.
Where can we see it once it is released? Where can we see all that?
They'll be on our website, joffrey.org /winningworks, but we'll get all that information out with eBlast, but it'll be on our website. Two of them premiering at the end of March and the other two premiering the second week of April.
That is really exciting because it's almost going to be like a reverse engineering for some young people when they see a finished product and they say, who produced it? Who put it out? And then they're young and they say, oh, maybe I should start looking into this. So that's really great to show a final product that kind of relates to that generation.
Right. So, you know, these films are going to be wonderful to have to, again, expose other students, children to the arts and see what we can do. And also, as I said, you know, choreographers of color, you know, we have to represent. We also started in the academy a BIPOC academy committee. Okay. It's, you know, for parents to come together to have a platform, a space for us to provide an inclusive environment for where all people are going to feel welcome to study and enjoy dance, and where these parents can come and talk to us about what's working, what's not working, to make it inclusive, welcoming, as traditional classical ballet was predominantly white, European, affluent. You know, how do we change this and make it, again, Joffrey for all? So I'm proud of this, you know, BIPOC Academy Committee. We actually have a meeting tonight with families again, and it's just, again, educating. We have one of our company artists who is BIPOC will be at our meeting tonight, and we've invited students of color also to attend so they can hear from the professional the obstacles, the journey of becoming a professional dancer.
It looks like you've thought of so many aspects of this, and I'm really happy and proud of you, and knowing that you're in this position. You've really been very thoughtful in the way you're executing and plan this. I can't wait till you're open 100%, because if you're doing this virtually, I can only imagine once you're, you know, at full force, everyone's there. So congratulations and thank you so much for everything you're doing and for lending me a little bit of your time. It's very
Of course, it was my pleasure.
I really appreciate it. So hopefully I'll be watching those videos soon. I'll be looking for
Yes.
them, and I'll be posting and sharing those. And thank you so much for being with me today.
Thank you, Emilio. It's my pleasure. Nice meeting with you and talking with you.
Okay, hasta luego.
Bye-bye. Gracias, adiós.